Okay, so let's talk three things to know about millennials. And this is, these are really categories to know about them. So there are, you know, a lot of information in each category. And critically important, why? As I said earlier, critically important because what we need to do is we need to know how to approach them when we're marketing to the millennials. You have to know what makes them tick. How are they different than we are? I know some of you are living with millennials, so you have a really good idea how they're different. And anyway, hang on 1 second. I got to make sure Lydia's out of my room. I don't want any background noise. Okay, so we really have an interest in knowing our markets because that's critical for us to be the best in terms of marketing to them. We change our language. We change what's most important. We get more, you know, sensitive to what their needs are and what they're looking at as a group. So, yeah, there's the three categories I'm going to talk about today that are major distinctions about millennials that I believe everybody ought to be aware of. First of all, number one, millennials are already the first generation ever expected to be less prosperous than their parents. Think about that. That's a pretty huge concept, isn't it? I mean, we think that the wealth in the United States just continues to skyrocket, continues to get better, all these things transpire, but it's not happening with this generation. First of all, let's define who the millennials are to get that straight in everybody's mind. They are people that were born between 1981, who would now be 37 years old, and 2001, and those people would be 17. So it's a 17 through 37-year-old, that 20-year age group are called millennials, also known as Gen Y, also known as the me generation. Some, you know, when you read about them across the board, we've seen for a long time now people talking to them as narcissistic, lazy, overly entitled, addicted to social media, and coddled by their helicopter parents. And, you know, they look at their parents' basements as if they're planning to live there until their mid-30s. Now, those are all pretty negative attributes, and I wouldn't use that language whatsoever if I ever were marketing to millennials, but you get an idea of their classification in our society, and you know, it's not that this information doesn't have validity to it. It obviously does because it's pretty prolifically published, but the idea is we don't talk to people from what their negative attributes are. We talk about the positive if we're in a marketing realm. Why are they widely predicted to become the first generation in U.S. history to do worse than the parents? Well, first of all, you look at statistics out there. High unemployment rate at 16.2% for young people 16 to 24. That's two times the national average, right? So, in fact, even more than that today because our unemployment rate is dropping. It's about 4% now, so 16.2% is actually like four times what our national average is. But there's a lot of reasons for that. It's not necessarily because they're lazy, and we'll talk about that as well. Limited financial prospects, even with unemployment, right? The unemployment being less than 4%, there's still limited financial prospects. Why is that? Well, if you start reading in the news, you're going to find out that half the jobs in America pay less than $18 an hour. Half. 50% of the jobs, $18 an hour. And it's really hard for people to sustain their lifestyle or really great lifestyle, especially if they're married or have kids at $18 an hour, you know. And these are U.S. Labor Department stats. The jobs are plentiful, right, because we know we have a unemployment rate of, like I said, 3.9% or something today, and it constantly hits the news because people are bragging about it. But the big problem is the majority of those jobs don't pay enough for people to live off of. Right? They can't sustain life. In fact, 40% of the jobs pay less than $15 an hour. And that's not going to sustain any kind of lifestyle that we're going to write home to mom about. And it surely isn't going to allow us to get married and have children. 40% of the jobs, less than $15.50 an hour. That's an incredible stat. So we might have high employment, but we have, you know, a pretty devastating environment for people to try to thrive on that kind of income level. So if you look at what's been going on historically in our wage rates, or, you know, since the year 2000 through 2017, so they don't have the 2018 stats yet, but from 2000 to 2017, the best paid workers, in other words, the top 5% in the employment line, their wages went up, or income went up 22% in that time period. The bottom half of the workers' wages or income went up in 17 years. They grew by 5%. And that's not annually, it's over 17 years. So that gives you an idea of what we're looking at. It's not so much that, you know, they have limited financial prospects in some jobs out there, but they have limited financial prospects from a perspective of the kind of income available for them to make. So they have millennials are most educated generation in American history, so there's no question they have the greatest amount of education. I think part of that, I didn't read this in the articles that I read, but I believe a lot of it had to do with the Obama administration when they freed up a lot of the college, you know, making loans available to a lot of people to get more extensive college education, to provide them with better opportunities out there, and expanding that, that caused a lot of people to go to college who may not have chosen to do so. And that also created something else, that a lot of these kids now have very high college debt. The cost of a four-year college, here's statistics for you based on the College Board publications, the cost of a four-year college rose 54% from 1998 to 2008. 54%. And that's a big chunk of the years that these, you know, millennials were going to college. So going up 54% just during that time period just shows you what's happened at our collegiate level. That's why we have a lot of arguments today about when are we going to get out there with free college? You know, that level of education, perhaps it should be free to consumers and make it more, you know, across the board available. But perhaps the biggest economic force is working against millennials and the younger generation Xers too, are income stagnation and the wealth gap. And these are important statistics to understand. A 30-year-old in 2013 is worth 21% less than a 30-year-old in 1983. Wow. That's 30 years later. You're worth less than a 30-year-old in 1983. That's not income stagnation. That's almost income regression, right? Think about it. Meanwhile, the net worth of the average 60-year-old today is more than twice as high as in 1983. So it's not so much about, you know, that we are accumulating more income or net worth in this country. It is about that what age bracket you're in that determines whether you're better off or worse off financially. So that's another huge stat that's really important to understand. Demographers point to skyrocketing college tuition for younger generations, higher unemployment, and sinking home values, middle class income stagnation. All of these factors point into a direction that causes millennials to have a greater struggle in their life. So it's not just, we can't just point their finger and call them lazy or narcissistic or all these other things. They have a real dilemma in front of them. There are some glimmers of hope. The Pew Research found that millennials in general to be optimistic and confident bunch. Even though they're not making enough money now, they will in the future. So they believe that in the future. So what does this tell you about approaching millennials with marketing products or marketing the Manatech products? You want to use an approach and talk about building for tomorrow. And that's truly what our model does. It builds for tomorrow. You don't make a ton of money today, but, you know, in 3 to 5 years, you could become financially secure for the rest of your life. So those are the kind of concepts that would gel with their thinking, right? And old school in their life priorities. What does that mean? Well, millennials today are kind of, you know, they're, a lot of them as a group are not necessarily selling out on becoming multimillionaires, but they're just saying that's just not important to me. They see the lack of their ability to do that perhaps by what's happened in the job markets, but they also are pointing towards they really want to be very focused on being great parents and raising happy children. That wasn't true about my generation, baby boomers. Absolutely not. And their third concern, okay, good parents, raising happy children, and giving back to society. What's wrong with those core values? Nothing. They're perfect. I would love people to have those core values. My generation is baby boomers. We were driven. I remember so crazy driven. Just go out, get a good job, go get great schooling, blah, 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 make a lot of money, chasing wealth building. And that's exactly what they talked about in the article, like their parents. Of course, we're now grandparents of some of these, right? My oldest grandson is almost 18 years old. So there's that shift is going on as well. But the idea is that these parents have great value systems. So how do we talk about that to millennials? we can talk about, you know, I did some research about you guys. I just have so much respect because you're looking at priorities in life being, you know, being great parents, raising happy children, and giving back to society. You can bring that up as something that you learned in studying the, you know, millennial generation. You could talk about that. You know, what, or you could, if you don't want to say you've studied them, you can say, you know, what I've found with millennials, which is so awesome in terms of my values in my life, is this is what you care about. And when you get to the concept of giving back to society, of course, if you're marketing the Manatech products, you can talk about M5M, right? Mission 5 Million. Perfect. But you don't just throw that in their face. Talk about, you know, what you've learned about the millennials. What, give them honor about what you've learned about them. That's honoring in a conversation. Instead of, I've read about you guys, and you're the narcissist, lazy, over and, you know, I mean, blah, okay? Use the right languaging. Quote from an economist, here it is. Maybe this generation won't have a worse life, but just a different life. And there's a lot of value to that as well. So, everybody's straight on that. How we communicate with millennials around their income, their wealth, their earning capacity, and how to point it in a direction that really suits in terms of marketing to them. So you know how to talk their language a little bit and honor them for what you've discovered. You know, what have I discovered about millennials, this, and this? And be positive about that. Go the right direction. And be sensitive to what really is happening in our economy in terms of, you know, half the jobs, you know, pay less than $18 an hour. So it's tough out there. It's a tough marketplace. And you get it. And that's why you're out there to help. Okay, number two, let's talk about the second point. Health is a real issue for millennials. Wow, I didn't realize these stats either. Millennials are the largest living generation. They're 73 million, okay? They are more actively engaged in their wellness, but their view is very different. Their view is actually driving some fundamental changes in healthcare. They're more hands-on. They're less red tape. In other words, they don't like institutional health. They take a more natural approach, and because they are, again, based on what we just realized under number one, they have tend to be income-strapped. They're very cost-conscious, so they're gonna avoid unnecessary, in their eyes, unnecessary health measures like, you know, preventive things and all those kind of things. So it's a very different view on in fundamental changes in healthcare. They are on track to have the worst health than their parents as they age. And you could look at some of the reports in that. I think we attached some or we're sending those out later. This means higher healthcare costs than previous generations as they age. And perhaps they will not be spending as long a time in the workforce. We kind of know that now. We're looking at projections in the future of what's going to happen down the road. And, you know, I was just dealing with this guy who's like an intellectual guru at this professional speakers camp. I've met him a number of times, and he just, you know, he's one of these data collectors in his brain, and he just knows how to shoot these things out. And very fun to talk to. For me, I'm not sure the average person would like to communicate with this guy, but he says, so Mary Jo, what are we going to do when 50 million people don't have jobs? And he's talking about 10 years from now. And our world's going to be upside down because the jobs just aren't available. We're going to have robotics. We're going to be replacing the workforce with automation. And he goes, have you thought about that? So we had an incredible discussion about that fact, too. So that's inevitable in our society as well because we are reducing the need for workers every day with automation. So we're going to have to deal with that one way or another. But let's talk about healthcare costs. So healthcare costs, because they don't have the income that their parents had at different stages of life that they've already been through in their 20s and 30s, they have to start working with, I'm not going to, you know, spend as much money on healthcare. So recent millennial report shows at one half visit doctor less than one time a year. Well, that's a great stat if it's just because they're not sick, but it's not a good stat that they're not taking some kind of precautionary activity with respect to their health. But I don't, honestly, when I was in my 20s, in fact, even today, I mean, I don't even have a main medical care doctor. When I go in for my colonoscopy and they say, well, who's your main medical doctor? And I said, I don't have one. Or general care physician. I said, I don't have one because I've been blessed with great health, so I don't have any, you know, regular doctor that I go see at all. I wouldn't even know who to go see. I would end up, well, I go to a doc in a box if something happens, right? So, but the recent Millennial Report shows one half visit doctor less than one time a year. 93% have no preventive care visits. 42% willing to cancel appointment if they have any other place to go. So in other words, they're just looking for reasons not to go. And 20% couldn't afford. So 47% they had to cut corners on health due to cost. Almost half of the millennials said they had to cut corners on health due to cost. So what door does that open to us? If we're marketing healthcare products and nutritional supplements, what a huge door that opens up, because we can talk to them about, you know, that's why I love to share my story with people, and not all of you have my story, but you have a similar story perhaps, about, you know what, if you take care of your health now, you don't have to worry about those costs. They're just never going to hit you. Because why? Because you're doing the best to prevent any health issue from occurring. So make an investment today and every day of your life into just the healthiest approach to taking care of your body. So talk about that with them, and that may be more interesting for them because they recognize already. And if they know statistically, you know, you could even say, you know, the other day I was, you know, reading about your generation, and they're saying that your health is a real issue, that wellness, you're on track to have the worst health than your parents have as you age because of the economic plight and just an attitude towards health that keeps you away from the medical profession. And then you can relate to me, go, hey, I want to stay away from medical profession too, but in order for me to do that effectively, I got a great approach I'd love to share with you. You know, there you go. Great languaging. So recognizing that, again, using these statistics and this awareness on how to best approach that largest percentage of our population. Less healthy side of wellness. In American Psychological Report, the three-quarters of the Gen Y, that money is a somewhat or very significant source of stress. So we know they're stressed out about money. Three-quarters of them, okay? Another three-quarters of them reported that work was a significant stressor. So they're not really excited about the work atmosphere, and they're, again, very stressed about income because they just don't have it. They don't have the resources, going back to that this generation is expected to be less prosperous than their parents, that the stats I gave earlier. So we know that stress is a big one. We know how to alleviate stress too. I mean, it's important if you want to alleviate stress, you want to make sure you're reducing the amount of what toxins going into your body, you're feeding your body as best you can. And I love to talk about stress from the perspective of antioxidants too. Stressors tend to cause oxidative stress on the human body, and so you want to reduce that, and we know a great antioxidant out there that we can use to do that. But it's a mechanism, again, of how do you relate to millennials and what's being written out there in regards to it, you know. And again, you don't say, I read an article about millennials and this is what it told me. That's not how you approach them. You go, you know, there's a ton of market research out there, and one of the things that I'm really sensitive to is you guys got a tough life compared to what we did as baby boomers, you know, and be sensitive about that, you know, and they'll go, yeah, you know. Yeah, notice that you're not pointing fingers at them. You're just telling them that they have it tougher than we have. Good languaging. Persistent use of technology causes negative impact on the physical and mental health. Oh, my gosh, we all know that. This generation is the more, you know, they're tied so much into their, you know, their phones, social media, their texting, their emails. The highest, in fact, they really probably, majority of them don't use emails anymore. There's kind of, yeah, Lydia just said, what is an email? So, but all that massive influx of information every nanosecond, right? Those are higher stress rates associated with that are also reported, because you're almost creating ADHD without, even if you don't have it, you're creating it. Your behavioral pattern is patterning after people with attention deficit disorder because you're constantly feeding new data in at every nanosecond. And then they did an evaluation of those people that were constant checkers. Some of you do that. I mean, I'm not a constant checker of emails and message texts. In fact, people get upset because I don't respond to them as quickly as they expect me to, because they might be constant checkers, and I'm not at all. I'm one of those more or less that goes, Lydia, yeah, I don't know where my phone is. Have you seen it? I haven't used it in the last 4 or 5 hours. You know, that's Mary Jo. It's just my way of life because I'm so focused on in the moment what I'm doing. And, you know, being in touch with everybody at every moment is not a priority in my life. But here you've got a lot of people that live and die that way. That's their lifestyle. But that's causing them to feel isolated. It creates an addiction that needs to be fed. You follow? You want that constant feedback, constant responsiveness, constant feeding in. And you're getting isolated because there's not human interaction anymore. It's just done on the phone. And when it's not happening for you, what happens? Depression, isolation, all these things kick in. So the quantity and quality of individual social relations have been linked to both mental and physical health. So that you can have a lot of mental health issues around that. And it's resulted in, as written in the articles and research, that increased absenteeism at work for this millennial generation, as well as presenteeism. Everybody understand what presenteeism is? It's kind of like, what are you doing when you're at work? You're not really present because you're constantly being engaged in social media. You're always on that little cell phone that you carry around wherever you go, right? So distractions, so focus and concentration are very far off. So that's presenteeism in the workplace. Several trends in the millennials' health have surfaced also in the past few years, so we're going to go through five of those. Mental health, highest reporting of depression among all other generations in the workforce. Some 70% of millennials where depression impacted their full capacity at work. That's really significant, people. So we really want to help that with people, getting people on a positive framework. So it's like, you know, having a side business that really produces some income that supports you can help you, you know, not be so glum about your predicament financially. Number two, we've got some great products that really help balance you hormonally. So maybe that's the direction you can go as well and get people on that terrific product called Plus, right? There's other alternatives there, but you've got to work with those people from the perspective that you know this is the kind of things they're suffering from. Number two is binge drinking. They said 1 in 6 adults binge drink, right? Adults age 18 to 34, out of that 1 in 6 binge drinker group, adults ranging 18 to 34 were the largest subgroup. Now, I'm less concerned about that, and here's why, because I was in that group at one time when I went off to college and even somewhat I gave up drinking in my law school, my first law school year, because I said I don't want anything impacting the way I think during my, because I wanted to perform at my highest, best level and not turn it over to something else. But I grew up, I mean, at 3 years old, I was in the garage drinking beer. My dad would give me a taste of his beer if I sang to the Miller High Life commercial. I'm not suggesting that's good parenting. I'm just suggesting that was how I was raised. So I became a huge beer drinker in my early years. And probably between 18 and 34, those were my greatest years of doing that, you know, quote-unquote binge drinking. But I think we grow up and grow out of it. So I'm less concerned about that because I suspect I would have fit into that group with this group readily at that stage as well. The cost of all the binge drinking, of course, is loss of productivity, health issues, criminal justice costs, and other expenses associated with that. Three, sexually transmitted diseases. They say that a higher risk among the young are resulting in the highest rates of STDs in the history of this country. Undiagnosed and untreated are often irreversible, and these are the ones that, again, aren't going for preventive health checkups. So they're most likely to have undiagnosed and untreated STDs. So it's just big in that category. Colon, and how do we relate to that when we talk to these people? We just talk about, you know, health results. You know, we can talk about, hey, get any healthy products, do a checkup once a year, and, you know, avoid the doctor. You want to talk about medical avoidance tactics. That's what you can do. MAT, MAT, medical avoidance tactics. You know, you can use that as your note, your synonym to go out there, your acronym to go out there and relate to millennials. They'll love that because that's what they'd rather do, right? And you want to make sure that they're doing that. Number four, colon and rectal cancers. Interesting. States that the Journal of National Cancer Institute states millennials are 2 to 4 times more likely to develop colon and rectal cancers than boomers. Wow. Now, I don't know statistically why they suggest that, but I guess they're looking at the medical results they've already seen. Journal of National Cancer says millennials are 2 to 4 times more likely to develop colon and rectal cancers than boomers. That's a huge statistic. That's a big difference. So might be new information to communicate as well. And finally, stroke. Study by JAMA. Researchers found as follows that rates of hospitalizations for acute ischemic stroke, REST, that's AIS, increased by nearly 42% for men 35 to 44, up 30% for women of the same age group. So we're seeing that strokes are coming, and I believe that you probably can directly tie that to a lot of the other things we talked about, like high stress, right? High stress, all that, you know, need to have information today, you know, that whole persistent use of technology, all these things are calling a higher stress, as well as the financial. So one of the things you could talk to millennials about would be the fact that what are you doing to try to get lower this stress level, which is going to kill you, because look at the stroke statistics about, you know, it's up 42%, and that's all caused mostly by stress or unhealthy behavior. Let's take a step and really tackle this now before you fall in that trap. So, yeah, and today we have, you know, one of the attempts at solving this problem is the latest digital devices give lots of diagnostics. In fact, we look at the Apple Watch and some of the other mechanisms that are coming out there to be able to, you know, tell when your heart goes into, you know, fibrillations or all sorts of things that are going to be immediate codes sent back to your medical doctor to alert them to give you a call to say, hey, time for you to come in for a checkup, right? They're really amazing, the technology, and it's only going to get better. So that's pretty cool. But no matter what you do, even if you have all that, you still need to, what, take action for preventive care. And that's what you're going to talk about, preventive care, preventive care, preventive care. Magic words. Finally, millennials became the world's, this is our third topic, is became the world's most powerful consumers. This is an article by John Gapper on June 5th of 2018. Create their own new products. Like they get tired of the products that are out there. If you see product category like this happened to be ketchup that hasn't changed in like 15, 20 years, the millennial generation comes along and they go, I'm so sick and tired of looking at the same stuff all the time. You know, let's form something new. And they brought up Sir Kensington ketchup story. The guys, a bunch of millennials, created their own ketchup, and it's now being sold in all sorts of grocery stores. It's coming out. It's a breakthrough, right? It's a breakthrough. So what do millennials like? They like breakthroughs. So what breakthrough do you have to go market? Well, a lot of you have the breakthrough of glycobiology to go market with people. So go market it with people. Preventive, exactly. They want something new. They want something different. They're tired of the same old, right? The largest group of people, that millennials, again, dictate all corporations to take into account their preferences. So they need to kowtow to those preferences. If they're going to start, if they're going to really tie into this marketplace, they have to look at them as a really critical consumer group. And no longer is the marketing group, say, you can look at this as Alan Jope, who's the president of beauty and personal care at Unilever. He said, no, we don't think of them as special or different anymore. They are the core of our business, the core of our business. Right? So that's how they're viewing millennials. So they have to target market them, and they have to figure this out. So that's what they're doing, just as we should be as well. Not just a generational shift, but also one of ethnicity and nationality. Did you know 43% of millennials are non-white? Largest population worldwide of millennials is found in Asia, and specifically in China. So what's intriguing is, you know, we can all go, wow, well, that's because China's got phenomenal population, billions and billions, right, and all this kind of stuff. We talk about their population. But here's an intrigue for all of you. Do you know China is a one-child family country? I mean, they limited their population by telling people they could only have one child. So even with the one-child approach, which has been out there for, I don't know, 15, 20 years, they still have the largest population of millennials. Okay, so what are the demands that they're making? Local, this is what they want. You know, they want local, original, and what they can feel and trust are all good. And maybe this is a little bit of a reaction to globalization. That's a quote right out of Nestle's U.S. and America's business, their marketing division. So what do we have that we can talk about? What do you look at with the products that you have? And it's telling a romantic story. For instance, you know, talking about local, original, and what they can feel and trust are all good. I love the story of aloe. I love the story of Costa Rica, the minerally, volcanic, minerally enriched soils of Costa Rica. The fact that this company that does all the manufacturing of those glycoforms is a company that's so dedicated they leave a zero footprint in the environment. You think that's big for millennials? It's huge for the millennial generation. So talk about the romantic story of where this aloe is grown, what the company's all about, natural aloe. It's just a great story. So make sure that that's part of your communication. And there's materials out there to support you as well. Organic, natural, non-GMO are crystallizing in the U.S. very fast. So they're very important. So we talk about that. Natural, non-GMO, organic. Those are the terminology that they're looking for. Global, why do you think that's going on in all the grocery food stores today? It's not because of you and me as baby boomers. It's because of millennial generation. Global brands do not work like in earlier generations. In other words, this millennial generation really loves little brands, local brands. So pick on a U.S. brand, a local brand, made only here in the U.S., right? This is a pay-made. And we can talk about how critically important it is. Does the brand speak to me? How is a brand going to speak to a millennial? Well, remember, what's one of their main things that they love that we looked at the other stage? Make a difference in the world. How are we making a difference in the world? Making a difference in the world through the M5M Foundation. So you talk about what is that charity that you're tied to, what difference you're making in the world. Global brands do not work like an earlier generation. So when we talk about global brands, we can talk about Centrum, One A Day, these horrific brands that are out there that are synthetically made. They've been, crazy. And instead you can talk about a small startup that came out in 1994. Small startup in 1994. They love to support startups. Startups, because startup is magic language to millennials, because a lot of them are looking at entrepreneurial businesses themselves. So talk about a small startup. Doesn't matter they're publicly traded today, they start as a small startup, because each of these millennials have the same dream when they start up a company. They'd love to take it public someday as well. And maybe there's a lesson there for you to learn, right, in that process. Pessimists outweigh optimists 2-1. Wow. That's hard. I mean, I'm one of these ultra optimists, but there are a lot of pessimists and because you look at the hardships they're going through, right? And especially if you ask them about improving their parents' fortunes, that's not going to happen. Again, not money driven. So, talking about money, talking about building a great, residual stream of income to support you, acknowledging that these problems exist in our economy today, that's problem solving. That's problem solving. Right? You follow me? Problem solver. Putting off leaving home, getting a job, marrying, and having children is the norm. And 45% of 18 to 34-year-old Americans had done all four, listen to this, in other words, left home, got a job, married, and had children. 45% of all 18 to 34-year-old Americans had done all four in 1975, but only 24% in 2015. So look at almost half less. So leaving home, getting a job, marrying, and having children isn't their priority in their early years of their life. So that's a big, big, big distinction. Trust is diminished both in organizations and in individuals. A Pew study in 2014 found only 19% of millennials believe others could be trusted, compared to 40% with the boomers and 31% of Gen Xers. So this lack of trust is not just in, government, it's also in big corporations. Again, notice what they like. Small startup, little company, 1994, took this breakthrough in nutrition and just took it to the world because it was so important to make a difference in people's lives. And now, basically changing the lives of malnourished kids around the world. Great story. Touching story. How to reach them? Not TV. Social media is great, but it has introduced a very fragmented way they absorb information, so you got to capture them in the moment, right? And millennials also, many times they experiment with some of the edgier brands, so they don't like mainstream, again, not like mainstream. Stuff on the shelf at the grocery store, mainstream type brands, they like edgier brands. Millennials still desire community experience, so you want to emphasize that, community experience. Soho House, WeWork, et cetera, are all seeing incredible growth. Community experience also includes Facebook groups, local meetups, those kind of things. They love that. And millennials in China are very different. So when you go out and you want to market to China, they're very different there. They are different because China, their millennials are on an upswing. They're actually making more money. They're the typical flow that we've seen historically in our society. But they're also an emerging economy, right? you know, if we look back 25, 30 years, what China was like, it's incredible what's gone on in the last 30, 40 years in that country. So we're just seeing, but they're almost going through an industrial revolution and have been for the last 10 years. Something that we saw back in the 30s and 40s, right, or 20s, 30s, 40s, they're in that process. So they're going through a very different, so if you're working with people in foreign countries, especially in China, you're going to see a different set of millennials than you see here in the United States. Okay, people, that's it. Hopefully, I gave you enough information, you know, taking some of this data and how best do we communicate that forward to capture the millennial generation. And you may want to listen to this over and over again, reread it, and be prepared. Draft out your own language, you know, get even sentences down or terminology that really will help best suit you in communicating with this generation, because judgment will not work. I mean, you can't, and chastising them and expecting them to be like you and think like you, wrong, it isn't going to happen, right? They're a different time, different age, different environment, different opportunities, different outlook on life, and so really important for us to grapple with that. But be positive, reward them where a reward is, you know, needed. I happen to have fallen in love with the concept of where they place their values. I think it's awesome. So it's a new generation, and we need to tap into it. Because why? Because they're the biggest consumers in the world today. And if you want to grow a business, when you're marketing products to people, you need to tap into that largest segment of our population. Okay, any questions? Good? You guys learned some things?
Good stuff, Mary Jo. Good. Thanks, dear.
Great. Here's a challenge for you. Go out and talk to at least 5 millennials this week and practice new languaging. How's that? Can you guys do that challenge? Can you grab onto that challenge? Yeah, I think so. I think now you know why they might be interested in compounding, too, when you tie it into Richard Brook training. Why might they be interested in compounding? Because their economic opportunities are limited compared to what we had as baby boomers. You know, the job market really is tough because it doesn't pay enough to sustain a family. So all the more reason to build a side business that's just fun and makes a difference in the world at the same time. Right? Got it, everybody? Okay, go out there, make it happen. Love you guys. Have a great week. And we'll talk soon. Bye, everybody.